Welcome to Dial a Dork, everyone. I am your MC, Irv Katz, and I am all by myself today. Nobody would come and do the show with little old me. I'm so sad and all alone. So you'll have to forgive me if this show really stinks or is super boring. I don't have anyone to talk to. I'm just going to sit here and, well, frankly, I'm going to sit here and ramble on for about an hour. See if I can even get through it. Maybe it'll only be a 10-minute show. I'm going to give up and throw the mic across the room and kick the cat. I don't have a cat. But anyway, let's just hop right into it. First thing I'd like to talk about is what douchebags all my fellow cast members are. I think they're all a bunch of jerks. And, you know, I wish them all a horrible holiday season. All right. Having said that, I think I just get into the nerdly, geekly, and dorkly type stuff. And starting off, I don't know if any of you noticed, maybe seeing some of the news reports of people trampling each other in Walmarts and so on and so forth, the sort of hysterical consumerism that we go through this time of year. We're so bad to each other, and we're so unhappy in general that we think that only the right material things will, as gifts, will make us love one another. It's and thus you can see what happens at the Walmarts and so on and so forth when people get the crap stomped out of them, just, you know, trying to go in and just so they can get a, you know, $300 laptop or something. That's probably a piece of crap anyway, but that's neither here nor there. One thing we get is not only do we get hysteria on the consumer side of things, we get hysteria on the manufacturer side of things. And it turns out that a large number of Xbox 360s, the new gaming system out from Microsoft, they're crashing. They're crashing every 20 minutes or something like that. But one extremely fed up but clever gamer realized that the power supply that came with it was actually, you know, overheating or something was wrong with it. So he has tied a piece of string around his power supply, I guess the big transformer box, and he's dangling it off the floor. And it's basically cured the problem, allowing a little airflow to get in, keep it cool. And that just goes to show you that, you know, as computers get more and more powerful, they are putting out more and more heat. And cooling has become more and more important. So let me tell you, if you're thinking about putting together your own computer, and if you've done, someone who's done this many times before, you already know, you know, what precautions you have to take, but make sure you get the right kind of heat sink for your processor. Make sure you use all the silicone heat paste or whatever the manufacturer recommends, and a good size fan. And they have plenty of good size fans nowadays that are quiet, so you don't have to worry too much about that. And cooling is just absolutely paramount, and you don't want to keep your computer or your Xbox or anything else, if you can help it, you know, inside a small cabinet or anything where there's no air to move around. The heat, the problem is that while you probably won't, like, melt your CPU anytime soon, although it does happen, you're going to get really bad performance, really weird performance, errors, problems like your Xbox 360 crashing. So keep all the components, you know, with as much fresh air as they can get, airflow all around them, and hopefully that will solve the problem. But it's pretty much a given. And also, don't hold your laptop on your lap without something in between your laptop and your lap, because you'll fry your nuts. Apparently, the heat from the laptops are doing quite a number on some young men and their scrotal region. And what can I say? It's not a good thing. So that's why I always use a pillow or something like that on top of my precious sperm factory, so that nothing bad will happen. Because as my wife knows all too well, I use my laptop quite frequently. And you know what? I'm just going to stop right there. It's starting to sound a little strange. It's probably more than starting to sound a little strange. Probably has been sounding a little strange for about 5 minutes now. Poppy, would you leave me alone? The dog has decided that now would be a good time to play. You weren't paying any attention to me for the last hour, and now? Why? Because I'm sitting here in the basement talking to myself? Are you concerned about me? Think I'm freaking crazy? I probably am. Anyway, did I mention that my fellow cast members are all a-holes and I hate them? Okay, so what should we move on to next? That killed about 6 minutes of the program. We only got 54 to go, and I already don't know what the hell I'm going to talk about. You know what? Google Base. Remember we talked about Google Base a couple of weeks ago? Google Base is kind of a sort of like free-form database that they have. They go to base.google.com that Google has come up with. It kind of reminds me of Craigslist. It's kind of like a thing where you can post, but you can do more than just like post, you know, like kind of like electronic want ads. You can do like job openings and all kinds of, and events and things of that nature. But you can also post recipes and all kinds of weird stuff. I even tried posting a dial-a-dork entry on there. If you go to base.google.com and maybe search for dork or something like that, it might come up pretty high in the rankings. But nevertheless, it looks like Microsoft is testing its own Google Base, as we would call it. And eWeek is reporting that Microsoft is readying an online marketplace, codenamed Fremont, which is apparently in response to a similar feature that rival Google Inc. introduced a few weeks ago. From the article, it says, the software giant will enhance the Fremont listings with localized maps and make them available through Microsoft's newly revamped internet portal, now known as Live.com, according to the company. And I guess that's all well and good. I do believe that the Google Base has the capability of doing the integration with the Google Maps, so I don't think Microsoft's ahead of the curve there on that one. But, you know, they're really not ahead of the curve on anything in terms of this. This is kind of annoying. In fact, it's unbelievable. At least Yahoo recently has started to do some things that seem original. Although for the most part, it seems like every time, you know, it seems like Yahoo and Microsoft are absolutely behind Google, and Google just continues to make them look bad and continues to kind of redefine what a, I don't know, if it maybe called a software company or what a an internet company ought to be like. You know, it's very possible that eBay is the next target, you know, with their rather questionable purchase of Skype, which I'll talk about in a second. Google may look at them as you know, possibly suffering from bloat or suffering from, you know, groupthink or some kind of, or maybe they just don't have any respect for the people running eBay right now, and I think they're going to go right after them. And I think, you know, if Google started running an auction thing, and they get this, you know, the Google Wallet thing going and everything, could be really, really effective, especially if they competed on fees. And, you know, if I were them, and I doubt they're listening, but if they are, I would put serious controls on what people can charge for shipping, because if I'm eBay, I'm very concerned that nothing on eBay really is any cheaper than anything else. Because of the shipping. And, you know, I go looking for stuff on eBay all the time, and I do buy stuff, but the shipping has gotten really out of control. In fact, people are kind of sidestepping a lot of the eBay fees by charging, like, nothing for the product and exorbitant shipping. So, you know, keep your eye on that. But anyway, eBay, like I was saying about eBay buying Skype, and it really doesn't make any sense, now it looks like Skype is being blamed for bad network performance in a number of markets and is getting, you know, quite possibly will get filtered out until they improve, you know, the way their efficiency, I guess. And so, I mean, Skype could be in for some hard times, and that means eBay could be in for some hard times. And, you know, Google is absolutely poised to swoop in. I mean, frankly, you know, not that I have anything against eBay or Yahoo or Microsoft, I really don't, but I just get the feeling that Google is going to do everything faster, better, more efficiently, and because of their corporate culture, I think I'd probably rather give them my business than anybody else. So, you know, I guess if Google is able to do away with the operating system for the most part, because I can eventually do everything I need to do at google.com, including all my, you know, productivity applications and everything else, then that, you know, hey, that's great. Okay. I think that's terrific. And I think that, hopefully they're not evil. They say they're not evil. We shall see. But I'm ready to do everything that I want to do through Google. I think I would be perfectly happy with that, especially if I have a nice, reliable internet connection. And I think most of us do. Now, let's see. What else? On the hardware side of things, Samsung reveals a flexible LCD. I think people have talked about this before. They demonstrated a flexible 7-inch LCD display made from amorphous silicon on a plastic substrate. Okay, that sounds delicious. The company says the flexible LCD will open up new possibilities for wearable displays or fashionable displays in the not-so-distant future. And if there's one thing that I think's been missing for my wardrobe, it's a television. What I would like on my T-shirt is not just some static logo or message. I want an LCD, and maybe, you know, strap a little, you know, one of those little pen drives or USB drives, you know, to my belt or something like that, and connect it to the shirt. And then I can, you know, have a little rotating message or some sort of marquee type message on my shirt. You know, I basically want to make sure that I'm always, you know, in the cool zone, if you will. Sometimes you might be wearing, you know, the wrong kind of T-shirt for your social situation, so you want to make sure that you can always control exactly what kind of T-shirt you're wearing, so that you're never out of place. You know, so. You know, when you go into that important business meeting, you can change your T-shirt from, you know, like Sex Pistols or, you know, Making Bacon, or, you know, I thought you were if you're wearing one that's, you know, has the caterpillar trying to make it with an Orida, the Orida is saying, you know, get the hell off me, I'm a French fry, you know. You don't want to wear that into your important business meeting. You want to change it to something, you know, more presentable. So I think that the flexible LCD is definitely going to be a huge advantage for me in my life and make things much, much simpler. I guess everybody's probably really excited also that Microsoft Vista could ship earlier than expected, which means that, you know, you're going to have to go out and upgrade your hardware sooner than you thought. I think this is probably a little bit like HDTV. I mean, eventually you're going to have to go and buy a new TV if you haven't already. But as I heard Mark Cuban say on Jim Rome's show today, that, you know, he believes, well, in, I think it's 07 or 08, every TV has to be able to process HDTV signals. Every TV manufactured and sold in the United States has to. So, it's not going to be, you know, prohibitively expensive at that point. I'm sure you'll be able to get a perfectly decent HDTV for a couple $100, just like you can get a perfectly decent TV today for a couple $100. What else is out there? What do you guys think so far? Is this going well? Oh, that's right. Nobody's here, so never mind. Let me see here. Somebody hacked an old Nintendo controller and turn it into an MP3 player where the buttons actually do stuff. And, you know, I think that, I think that's just dumb. But I think people, or I think, actually, I just think people have too much time on their hands. I don't know how dumb it is. I mean, I guess it's cool and all. I mean, you show a few people and it's great. They, you know, they think you're awesome, whatever. But, you know, it's, I think it's just got pretty limited potential there. But everybody wants to stick, you know, the electronic device into the case of their choice. And I guess I say more power to them. You know, the people who did, like, you know, the Star Wars, the Death Star subwoofer and things like that. You know, absolutely. Have at it. But we just have, I think, a little bit too much time in our hands. I think that's all. I think there's some good we could be doing instead of, you know, making a Death Star subwoofer. But, you know, I'm not trying to be like a, you know, heavy. I'm not trying to be some big downer or something like that. I'm just saying, you know, come on. Let's see. Ports for porn. using firewalls to block porn. Now, look, I don't understand what the hang-up about porn is exactly. You know, I watched Kirk Franklin today on Oprah. Yeah, I watched some Oprah today. I took a little gander at Oprah. And, you know, I got to tell you, gospel superstar Kirk Franklin spent, you know, like 20 years of his life, as he calls it, addicted to porn. And he said he looked at it every day. And I'm like, is that what passes for addicted to porn every day? I mean, I'm talking about, you know, I know people who, and I might be talking about, myself. I'm not really going to say. I know people who, you know, look at porn at work or whenever they're on the internet, you know, all the time, every few minutes, just, you know. And it's almost like you can't really help it. I mean, you know, something comes into your email and you click on it and all these wonderful pictures start loading in your HTML-based email that you got from, you know, MILF Hunter or whoever, Bang Bus or something like that. And next thing you know, you're inspired to kind of go look at some porn for a few minutes. It's just, that's just the way it is. I mean, I think, I don't think that, you know, well, I think, you know, porn is something that's been around for millennia, okay? There's, I believe there's a cave drawing of someone humping a buffalo. Well, I don't know what they were doing, but I'm just saying, I'm pretty sure there's cave drawings of depicting sex, and, you know, granted, it's, you know, not as entertaining as, you know, a porn tape from your favorite porn tape producer. But I'm sure back in the day it was pretty awesome. You know, I'm sure all the fellas got around in their animal skins and everything and, you know, circle jerk to the cave drawing. You know, it's pretty sweet, I gotta tell you. But this guy is suggesting, a Utah businessman, and I figure he'd be from Utah, you know, I just don't understand. And his nonprofit organization wants to limit pornography to certain ports in the TCP/IP protocol. He is literally suggesting legislatively restricting porn sites to certain ports so that the offensive content is easier to block. And I think what this gentleman I don't know if he knows anything about networks and computers and all that kind of thing. I mean, maybe somebody, you know, gave him this idea, some, you know, do-gooder, you know, network tech that happens to go to his, you know, Mormon cult fest or whatever. But it just, this isn't going to work. The reason it's not going to work is because you couldn't possibly, first of all, you couldn't possibly enforce this, I don't think, on any sort of a worldwide scale. I mean, there are too many countries out there that would simply jump at the chance to host all the porn in the world and spit it out on every single port imaginable. Certainly not on some restricted port. I mean, it's just silly. But what's even sillier is just that this guy wants to do this. I mean, you know, it's something you need to, you know, if it really bothers you that much, then you need to be vigilant about not looking at it yourself, not letting your family look at it, keeping it out of your home, you know. But this is the United States, okay? This is America. And if you can't look at porn on the internet in America, then where can you, you know? Well, other places, I know, but this is where you're supposed to be able to do that and not be judged. I mean, that's what the United States is all about, I thought. I mean, you know, I'm pretty sure that's what Thomas Jefferson had in mind, okay? That's what I'm saying. The guy was a porn hound. We all know it. Let's see. What else is going on here? Yeah, I'm sorry about this. You know, normally I would start looking on Slashdot or someplace for something interesting to talk about while my other cast members, you know, would talk about, you know, whatever it is we're talking about. And that's just not going to happen tonight. So you're going to hear me go like, while I'm searching for something. Let's see. Well, I found something already, so that's pretty cool. 300 gigabytes in the size of a DVD. Hey, that sounds good to me. Holographic versatile discs, HVDs. Well, now, I think we all know that HVDs don't really sound like something technological. It sounds like something that, you know, would grow on your pecker. But that's neither here nor there. HVDs have been in the works for some time now by various companies, including Enphase Technology, formerly part of Lucent, Japanese and Japan's Optware, which claimed to have made the first recording of a movie on a holographic disc last year. Enphase's HVD, scheduled for the release in 2006, are said to hold 300 gigs of data, which is something like 60 times that of a conventional DVD, with only a slight increase in size. So that's like a whole day's worth of high-definition quality video. Now, looks like Maxell, who is one of Enphase's partners, ironically, is also working towards even more storage on a 1.6 terabyte disk. I love it. I love it. Give me more. Give me more storage like that, okay? You know, it's if for no other reason than just for archiving data. I mean, I love it. Give me as much data in as small a space as I can possibly get. It would be so great to be able to have like a 1.6 terabyte disk that's like, you know, the size comparable to the size of a compact disk today. That you could, you know, take on an airplane and pop into a player or something like that, and you've got like, you know, a whole host of movies and TV shows and various things that you've recorded, and music and maybe books and just all kinds of stuff, and just on one disc, you know. It would just be, you know, how sweet is that? I would love, you know, this is, I really got to tell you that, you know, all this terrorism and stuff, it's really bugging me, you know. It's really bugging me because there's so many cool things on the horizon technologically and so many awesome things that I want to check out on the internet down the road and so many cool movies I want to see and so many TV shows that I want to watch and all this kind of stuff. I really don't want someone to ruin the world for me. And I really don't want someone to destroy my internet access or, you know, get this country so freaking scared that I can't even do anything at all because we're on total lockdown. So, you know, what I'm saying is, this is an open letter to terrorists. So that I'm saying is that we've got 1.6 terabytes on a disc coming around the corner. Don't screw it up for everybody, okay? It's going to be awesome, all right? It's going to be better than, I don't know, 72 virgins in heaven, okay? It's just going to be better. I'm telling you. All right, let's see. Moving on. Breathing life into older computers. This is something that I've done on many occasions. My good friend Don Larson, who runs the Capitalist Cleveland program, his whole website and all his audio archives and his discussion forum are hosted on a Pentium 200 with, I think, 64 megs of RAM, maybe 128, I don't know, not a lot, though, and like a 20-gig hard drive, and it's a beautiful thing. It's running Debian Linux with a pretty lightweight set of packages, and it does a beautiful job. It does a beautiful job serving up web pages, serves up, you know, PHP and all kinds of stuff. It does a lovely, lovely job. It's even running MySQL, and you know, under its, you know, I mean, obviously, if it was being hit, you know, 25,000 times a day, it might not be able to handle it. But you know, we were all pretty honest about you know, Don's audience and everything like that. It's not going to get that many hits. So it just absolutely does the job. And I had the parts on hand. It was terrific. So you know, I'm sure if Matt were here, which he's not, he would tell you that Linux is a great way to breathe life into an old computer. There's all kinds of things that you can do with an old computer. You can make a really robust firewall or a really, you know, complex router using Linux, using an old computer. You can do all kinds of things like that. I would also suggest that Windows 98 Second Edition runs extremely well on older computers. It really, really does, and it takes up very little hard drive space, just a few, just like, you know, 300 megs or something, and it does a beautiful job. I mean, if you're not asking it to do too much, there are certain things that aren't going to work. But the reason I say Windows 98 Second Edition is because almost every USB-based thing out there, the drivers only go back that far. I don't think like USB support was even in Windows 98 until Second Edition. I mean, I might be wrong about that, but you know, pretty much every USB-based device doesn't go any further back than that. But, you know, your older computer, there's a lot of things you can do, and it's great, you know, a great thing to give to grandma or something like that. If she wants to start using email, not a problem. So, and let me tell you, if you've got an old computer and you don't want it anymore, you can give it to me. I'll tell you right now. You can email me at dorks@dialadork.com. That's hyphenated. dial-a-dork.com. You can give it to me, and I'll take it. I'll take it off your hands. Shit. I'll do something with it. I'll give it. I mean, I can clean it up, get it working. I can give it away to charity. You know, they're always selling computers over at the Goodwill, and so the ones I got over there right now, are just like the ones I'm talking about. They'll get the job done. And, you know, they won't be doing anything, you know, really interesting, but they're good enough to surf, good enough to use an old version of Office, you know, good enough to use Outlook Express, and for a lot of people that's all they need. You know, they might need to slap an old network card in there. I got a few of those. Not a problem. And the beautiful thing is that there's just drivers for just about everything out there, archived and you know, just waiting. It's really nice that most of the hardware manufacturers maintain their drivers for such a long period of time. I mean, what does it take to do that? Almost nothing. Let's see. And here's a guy talking about getting a new computer. Another argument for Linux is, like, you know, when you go to buy a computer, just the hardware, he's calling like the Microsoft tax. Because you got to pay, if you're going to get a new version of Windows XP, it's going to be $200. And if you're going to get Office, it's going to be another $200 to $400, depending on which version, you know, depending on how many, which version you get. You know, whether it's going to have like all the programs or just the essentials like Word, Excel, and Outlook, and like PowerPoint or something like that. That's like $200, I guess. And if you get them all with like Publisher and Front Page and all that crap, it's like $400 or something. So, I mean, you're looking at like anywhere from $400 to $600-$700 right off the bat, added to the cost of your computer. So, you know, just another argument for Linux is that, hey, it's free. The argument against Linux is that nobody knows how to use it, except total dorks. And that's fine. That's totally fine. There are some much more user-friendly versions of Linux coming out, I guess, like this Ubuntu situation has a, you know, like a nice installer that, you know, makes sense, like Red Hat, sort of like that. But, you know, even like the old Red Hat 8 and 9 installer was just, like, cryptic. Like, I didn't really know what I wanted, you know? All right. So what can I say? If you don't know what the hell you're doing, and you're just not going to get Linux. You're going to get Windows because Windows has, you know, like, is designed for, to, you know, be able to be used by total novices. Let's see. Why does beta last so long? This is a very interesting question, actually. Beta, and if you ever notice, like, you go to Google, like, half the stuff is quote-unquote in beta. And beta is kind of a state where a software or a product or whatever is stable, but it's not, you know, all the bugs haven't been worked out, so it goes into a testing phase, and it's released to either to the general public or released to a group of beta testers. And so we call, you know, like software that's totally raw is like alpha, and software that's stable but needs testing, needs real world testing is beta. And and, you know, I guess I'm trying to think, like, Google News, I believe, and I'm going to confirm this right now, but Google News, I believe, is still in, yeah, and here it is, Google News beta. It's still in beta, and I think the reason, if I remember correctly, the reason that Google News is still in beta, and I don't know why beta lasts so long for other things, like the Microsoft anti-spyware is still in beta, as far as I know, and that's been around for like a year. The reason Google News is in beta is because they don't have any ads, I don't believe. No ads on it. It's not a commercial thing. They're claiming that it's in real world testing, I guess. And, the reason they're doing that is because they are cross-linking to copyrighted content, which not every, you know, content provider is happy about it. I think there was like a French newspaper or something that was totally suing them. But I think the idea there is that, well, you know, hey, it's in beta. You know what I mean? It's, give me a break. We're not trying to make any money off it. We're still testing. So, you know, what's your beef? So, I think that was the deal there. this guy is kind of funny. And he says, betas also have become a marketing device in a fiercely competitive industry, allowing software and internet firms to release new products or services sooner and cultivate early buzz. Now, this is true. I mean, if something comes out in beta, I'm more than willing to use it, because nowadays, almost everything in beta is totally stable. Betas, which once had been quietly distributed, are trumpeted in press releases and at news conferences. This is absolutely true. And he quotes, he says, "I deplore it as a consumer. I admire it as a marketing professional," said Peter Seeley, a marketing professor at the University of California at Berkeley and former chief marketing officer at Coca-Cola. So I think this guy knows a little bit about marketing. He says, "I can't come up with anything else in the entire marketing world where marketers knowingly introduce a flawed or inadequate product, and yet it helps to grow your user base." And you know what? He's right. I mean, if Coca-Cola distributed, you know, like faulty bottles for user testing out in the regular world, and they, you know, exploded, or something like that, I think they'd probably get sued. They can't do that, but software manufacturers can, because they basically just come out and say, "Hey, this is beta. You use it at your own risk." I think the thing you got to remember, though, is that, and this might be the Microsoft effect, kind of, but there's so much software out there, and software is such a complicated thing. You know, very little software is simple. It's all extremely complex, and it, you know, the reason it is so complex is because it has to accommodate so many, you know, possible avenues of action. So you kind of have to think of everything when you write software, because the computer can't think for itself. So you have to tell it what to think in every conceivable situation, and you try to, you know, narrow the worldview of that particular software to a very manageable, you know, set of avenues, but you can't really think of everything, and then you can't even think of the sort of chaos that exists all around it with other software and the operating system and everything that's going on, and the things that you can't believe a user just did, they actually did, and you never could have predicted that, and there was no way to test for that. So, I mean, things go into beta for a good reason, and they stay in beta for a long time for a good reason, and when they come out of beta, they really should work, but it's shocking to find how many things that come out of beta don't work. You know, so, hell, I mean, if you're not sure, you know, if you're not trying to sell it yet, keep it in beta. Let's see, 8:33. Wow, awesome. I'm more than halfway there. You know, I'm not bored. Are you? Well, you can't really talk to me, and luckily I don't have to worry about it. Anybody else thinks really at this moment, because nobody bothered to show up. So screw them. Yeah, I'm pissed off. I'm totally bitter. We didn't have a show last week, you know, because of the holiday and everything. But you know, come on. I mean, Dewey the Answer Man didn't go to the show today because he wanted to get work done. Now, am I supposed to believe that? I mean, if that's really true, then damn. All right, let's see. I'm just kidding with you guys. You know I love you. Let me think here. Cybercrime more lucrative than drugs. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, you know, if I was going to choose some crime to do, I think cybercrime would be my way of doing it. I mean, it's a lot less walking, you know, really. Let's see. Blah, blah, blah. Introverts have more brain activity? Yahoo News is reporting that introverted individuals tend to have more brain activity in general, specifically in the frontal lobe. The attitude that there's something wrong with introverted people is widely shared in society, where fast talk and snap decisions are often valued over listening, deliberation, and careful planning. Extroverts seem to rule the world, or at least the USA, which hasn't elected an introverted president for 3 decades since Jimmy Carter. Well, just because you're introverted doesn't mean you're thinking things over. You could be sitting there just, you know, afraid to talk. You know, but I'm not going to argue with their findings. You know, I'm obviously an extrovert, and I'm, you know, pretty much dumb as a bag of hammers now. So, screw them. It doesn't matter. You got to deal with me. Oh, can we talk about Diebold for a second? I mean, has anybody read any of these articles and these assertions about these like voting machines. It's not just Diebel, but it's like, I guess, these four companies that make basically most of the voting machines in the country. And like the reports that I'm reading about errors and possible like just absolutely bad programming that was like, you know, basically stole the election in 2004 for George Bush, and all these other strange occurrences, you know, voting machines that took like 4,000 votes, and no matter what the kind of vote they were, they all went to Bush or something crazy. Like, I mean, I'm reading all these weird stories, and Diebold is like just the, I guess, the founder or the president or whatever, is just, you know, really, really right-wing guy who's a big-time supporter of the Republican Party and the Bush family and all this stuff. And it's creepy, man. It's really creepy. I can't believe there isn't any transparency. I can't believe that there just simply wasn't a, you know, I'm like shocked that there isn't just a department in the government, you know, Department of Voting or voting machine, you know, what the hell, man? I mean, we don't need to hire a third party, do we? I mean, can't our government manufacture something? Can we do that? I mean, this is important, and everything has to be totally transparent. I mean, this is voting. I mean, this is the whole basis of our society, and we can't have it be, you know, in question like that. So forget Diebold and all these other companies. I mean, they're making, you know, these insane government contractor bucks. Forget it. It's a waste of my tax money. Screw it, man. Let's have a department that is going to, you know, manufacture and regulate these voting machines, and they're going to be all the same all across the country. If that's where we're going to electronic voting, which that too is debatable. I mean, it may be better to do it by paper. It may be better to have that paper trail, or at least, you know, print out a damn receipt. I think the Swiss do it. I think the Swiss have electronic voting machines, and they give you a little receipt and everything of your votes. So, you know, what can I say? I mean, come on. It's got to be transparent. Got to be a paper trail. Period. You know, and may the best man or woman win. I mean, that's all there is to it. Let's see. Born with couch potato genes, Science Daily is reporting on an experiment that suggests that an individual's activity level shows a genetic basis. Research conducted by scientists at the Oregon National Primate Research Center at Oregon Health and Science University. Who's ever heard of that, by the way? Reveals that a person's level of activity is likely an intrinsic property of that individual. Well, sure. I mean, your DNA is so complex. It's so fabulously complex that I wouldn't be surprised if damn near every characteristic that you possess can be traced back to some sequence of genes. That's what I believe. I think that the totality of those genes combined with your experience make you a person. But your sort of framework for dealing with life, I think, is probably pretty much hard-coded. I don't think that's really debatable. I think, you know, your hardware is hardware, but your software, you know, responds to the world. And depending on what happens to you in life, you know, life isn't fair, that sort of thing. You know, some people have very good things happen to them at the right time. Some people have very bad things happen to them at the wrong time. And, you know, depending on your framework, you deal with it this way or that way. And you just kind of go on from there. And, you know, you're more than just your genes. You're more than just your experience. You're some, you know, amalgamation of the two. But I'm pretty sure we're fairly hardwired, but we have, you know, this tableau or this canvas on which we're able to, you know, create ourselves. Wow, man. I knew I shouldn't have smoked weed before the show. All right, let's see. Where are we going now? Lockheed Martin selects Linux for missile defense. I can't say that I have a big problem with that. I know that there's like some air, some air control places and airports and other things and naval ships and things that are running Windows NT and stuff like that. You know, I don't know. I mean, if Windows wasn't stable, nobody would use it. For the most part, it's fairly stable. It's not without its problems, but it's pretty freaking popular. Made Bill Gates a pretty wealthy man. It can't be all bad. But I guess what I'm really trying to say is that Linux, I think, is much more malleable than Windows. You know, Windows is kind of this sort of package deal. You kind of have to take it all. It's kind of trying to be all things to all people, which is fine because it really needs to be all things to all people. But I think, like, you know, Linux can be very carefully crafted to suit a specific purpose and in that way can be extremely stable. And I think when it comes to missile defense, I think stable's fairly important. You know, I think it would suck if somebody launched an ICBM this way and we got a blue screen of death before the bright fiery orange wave of death. Cyber Monday doesn't exist. Despite a huge amount of hype, the Monday after Thanksgiving is historically the only the 12th biggest online shopping day of the year. Do a Google search on Cyber Monday and you get as many as almost 800,000 results. Not a bad haul for a term that was created just a week and a half ago. Yeah, this definitely smacked of marketing. I'd never heard of Cyber Monday until this year. Maybe this year it'll be a lot bigger than other online shopping days, than it's been in the past. I didn't really do any shopping on quote-unquote Cyber Monday. I did more of it on Tuesday, which didn't have a nickname. Now, Black Friday, I chose not to participate until later in the afternoon, and it was remarkable. I was in a department store in Greensboro, North Carolina, of all places, and there were these Timberland boots that were on sale for $65. I mean, I wasn't in love with them, but you know, Timberland boots, $65, not too shabby. So I went to the little shoe store next door just to make sure there wasn't anything I liked better. And when I came back, this early bird had ended and they were up to like $90. So, Black Friday was my Black Friday story. I didn't get involved in any throwdowns. But I didn't buy anything on Cyber Monday. I can't say that I didn't shop and I can't say I didn't look at internet porn. But it was nothing special. Let me see. Apple might be coming out with a PVR. There's a rumor, and it might feature an Intel CPU. I think a lot of people would go for that. I think the Apple crowd is, you know, they really trust Apple now. They really trust Apple to put out really high quality, really cool looking, really stable, workable, user-friendly stuff. And you know, people have their iPod, and then they went and got their iBook, and they got their iMac, G5, whatever. Now they're going to get the Apple DVR or the iTivo, whatever the hell it's going to be. And you know, I say more power to them. I bet it's going to be awesome if it ever happens. Okay, now here's something. Look, as a Rush fan, I've played a great deal of air guitar, air bass, and air drums, and well, I might add. And New Scientist has a nice feature of a real air guitar developed by three students at the Helsinki University of Technology. In a nutshell, it's a Linux PC with a sound card and a webcam. And I guess it just, you know, picks up what your arms are doing or whatever your hands are doing. And you're playing air guitar. So now you can actually discover that you really and truly, you have no talent. You never had any talent. You're never going to have any talent. You can't even play air guitar well. I mean, have you listened to the crap that your air guitar is putting out? It's garbage. It's garbage. So you suck. And so I want to thank those students at the Helsinki University for, you know, finally driving the final nail in my music career. There's an unpatched IE flaw, that's Internet Explorer, that's extremely critical. This is not a surprise to anyone. When 90% of internet browsing, or some obscene percentage, 85% of internet browsing is done on your browser, you're going to be the target for nefarious activity. People are going to research your product extremely closely and finely to discover every vulnerability and then try to exploit them. I mean, this is just the fact of life when you're at the top of the heap. You know, this is how it goes. So hopefully Microsoft will figure out a way to patch that and just, you know, keep running the race that they're currently running against the bad people. What are you doing, Poppy? What are you doing? Are you trying to eat a battery? Don't eat a battery. Yeah, I could put out a new... Here's a news flash. Batteries are bad for dogs. Get out of there. Hey, stop it. All right. Sorry about that, folks. Yes, yes. That's right. Oh, yes, yes. I know. I know you wanted to eat the delicious battery. Yes, the battery was just so yummy. All right. Well, you can't have it. Okay, hey, guess what? Remember we talked about the old Sony Rootkit DRM system that's just, you know, just awful and created these huge vulnerabilities in everybody's systems and people wrote viruses to take advantage of the rootkit and people used the rootkit to defeat the rootkit and all this kind of stuff. Looks like Sony may have been warned weeks ahead of this rootkit situation. The people over at F-Secure, which is an antivirus group, I think I want to say out of Finland. Everything's about Finland last couple of stories. Air guitar, now we got antivirus. It's unbelievable. I got to get to Finland. I think I'd like to visit there. I'm not a huge herring fan or anything, but, you know, I'll go. Anyway, I guess they discovered a problem with it, and they discovered it a long time ago, like back, you know, in like October or something. And they told the people who Sony didn't actually make the software. It turns out they contracted a software company in England to do it. And those guys said, oh, it's nothing serious, and besides, nobody knows about it. And F-Secure is like, you know, what do you think we are, idiots? I mean, this thing is terrible, and they're going to know about it. But they decided to ignore it, and it blew up in their faces completely. And now, like, Elliot Spitzer, who's the Attorney General of New York, is going after Sony. I think they're already going after Sony in some other state and got a class action suit going. So, you know, Sony's in a world of hurt here, and it's just, you know, these last gasp efforts to cling to an outdated business model. You simply can't protect these files. It's just not going to work. They're going to find a way around it. You have to come up with another way to make money selling music. And, you know, things like, I think people are willing to spend, you know, $1 a song. People are willing to spend like $1 a song or so, or, you know, 15, 20 bucks a month for like access to a music library, you know, and the money's going to keep flowing in, you know, you're going to have to adjust, you're going to have to change. You might have to shrink a little bit, you know, you might have to curtail some of the expenditures or you know, whatever, because, you know, maybe you shouldn't have been making so much damn money on music in the first place. Maybe it's just not worth that much. What? The only person here is keeping me company is this dog. So I'm sorry that you're just gonna have to deal with it, because I got nobody else. Okay, I'm in abandoned. I am lonely. I'm sitting here talking to nobody. So I'm gonna play with my dog while I do this, because she's the only one who cares. Let's see. New Orleans to deploy free Wi-Fi citywide. The Washington Post is reporting that New Orleans will deploy a citywide Wi-Fi network with free public access. Much of the equipment has been donated, but New Orleans will own and operate the network. Interestingly, they are only able to do this while a state of emergency remains in place, as technically their planned 512 kilobit per second service violates state law prohibiting municipalities from offering access at speeds in greater than 144 kilobits per second, a restriction the city plans on fighting, even though they will eventually outsource the whole operation. Well, I don't know anything about that whole bandwidth limitation thing. It sounds pretty stupid to me, but whatever. Anyway, I think this is a beautiful thing. You know, anything really that can be done for the folks down there is a good thing, but... you know, hopefully this is something that they can be proud of for a long time to come, and maybe something that attracts people to their city, you know, when they get it back up and running. And I think it's wonderful for people who have been displaced. They can, you know, they can still be in contact with the rest of the world. I mean, I don't know. Things are pretty chill up here in Cleveland. We, you know, all we get is some wind and some rain and some cloudy days. You know, we don't really see too much of things like hurricanes and stuff like that. So, you know, I can't really say much, but I'm happy for them that they're going to at least have this. I know I'd be happy if I was sitting in, you know, some place I didn't have my home, and I could start checking my email and conducting business again. Firefox 1.5 is out. I downloaded it. I don't really see the difference, but then again, I don't really care. I like Firefox. It works. And it's free. And it does some things very well, you know. Then again, so does Internet Explorer. I guess I really don't care. I'm not one of these. I'm not a browser snob. I use them interchangeably. Sometimes it's my surfing habits. The tabs in Firefox are really cool. I like those, and I like how many plugins there are, extensions. Yeah, it's cool too. Let's see. Vonage 911 deadline has passed. Yahoo is reporting that the FCC may block any new customers wishing to sign up with Vonage. The internet phone service company has passed the Monday deadline that was given to them to provide reliable 911 service. The company, which has more than 1 million subscribers, said it was capable of transmitting a call, a callback number and location for 100% of its subscribers, but that it was still waiting for cooperation from competitors that control the 911 network. Well, you know, I mean, come on, guys. Somebody just... Cooperation from competitors that control the 911 network? This is insane. We're not talking about... something frivolous here. This is 911. I mean, somebody's got to get in there and... Look, Vonage and VoIP and all that kind of stuff, it's not going away. It's just going to get bigger. Okay? It's just going to get bigger. So someone's got to step in and you know, make this work, okay? If somebody is, you know, holding out, you know, the 911 service so they can, you know, make some more money or something, I mean, that's... could potentially be viewed as despicable. I like this story. Driving away teens with high-frequency noise. You know, I think we've all seen these, things to drive away rodents and birds and bugs and things with this sort of piercing, high-frequency noise that, like, won't affect the family dog, but will drive, you know, bugs crazy and they want to get out of your house. Or, you know, little varmints or whatever. Now it says it's going to work on teens because it's noise that only they'll be able to hear, and older people, because their ears are all messed up from being alive for so long, won't be able to hear it, and that it works really, really well. But some old people still can hear it. Oh, well. He says here he found the perfect irritating sound by experimenting on his children. You know, I guess teens are out of control. What can I say? I'm not a parent. I really don't know. Someday I'll find out. But I guess kids are real assholes. Is that what it's coming down to? We have to use high frequency noise to kind of get them off your yard or something? Isn't that the ultimate in being that guy in the neighborhood? Let's see. I said Microsoft was doing the Google base thing. Bunch of copycats. Yahoo email and RSS integrates blogs. I think Russ talked about this. Maybe I can get him to talk about it next week if he shows up. About email and RSS and getting that all to work. Or maybe it was Dewey talking about AnchorBud or something, about sending an email and it being turned into RSS or something. I forget. We'll talk about that later. I got to remember to do that. Let's see. The first face transplant was performed in France. Now, I actually thought that it was performed a long time ago in that John Woo movie, Face Off, but I guess I was wrong. The medical team led by Jean-Michel Dubernal transplanted live tissue to a 36-year-old woman whose face had been destroyed by a dog. It has been technically possible to carry out such a transplant for some years, with teams in the U.S., the U.K., and France researching the procedure, but the ethical concerns of a face transplant and the psychological impact to the patient of looking different has held teams back. Well, you know, I guess that's perfectly understandable. But if your face has been completely ruined by a dog, I think that you would probably be ready to go for it. And indeed she was. So good luck to her, and I hope she. I hope it turns out to be a workable solution for her. There's more MP3 sunglasses coming out. These are kind of sweet, and apparently Manny Ramirez has been using them during games, which is, you know, another example of Manny being Manny and just why I miss him so much here in Cleveland. He was such an entertaining player. Let's see. Intel and TiVo are going to team up on a PC platform in hopes to standardize it. All right, fine. I think we actually talked about that a few weeks ago. What is this? The failing grade given to the ESRB ratings board? The report card did not look good for the rating board, which almost immediately fired back. The reality is that publishers understand that retailers largely choose not to stock AO-rated games, and so... Oh, adults-only games. In the interest of producing marketable games, publishers will oftentimes revise and resubmit a game that was initially assigned an AO by raters in an effort to produce an M-rated game. Well, you know, big deal. I mean, movie producers do that all the time when they get, like, an NC-17 and they don't want it. Let's see. Vast subsurface Martian ice discovered. Okay, whoop-de-doo. Just let me know when the Martian rovers or whatever are attacked by actual Martians, and I'll be truly interested. Here's something. What makes a good IM client? I think we might have addressed this on a previous show also. The Google Talk that's come out, I'm sure, is going to be the one that most people eventually use because chances are it's going to work the best and be the most extensible. So people can, you know, customize it to their liking. But I'll really never get over that in those first couple of generations of the ICQ chat client with its amazing chat interface and its instant messaging and the cool little sounds that it made. And it just worked so well. And I had a 6-digit number till somebody stole it from me, which I still don't understand how that happened. But that's whatever. Neither here nor there. Let's see. Oh, yeah. Now they're talking about that... BlackBerry, like, I don't know if you heard about this, like, Research in Motion. They're losing all these lawsuits. I guess they pilfered the technology to do the email delivery on the BlackBerries. I mean, that's they're saying that it's very possible that your BlackBerry won't be able to receive email in the future. I mean, that's not good, and it's not been good for the stock price of RIM either. Not good at all. And they just lost another case, I think, today. So that's something to keep your eye on for sure. Well, you know what? I'm pretty much out of topics. I've just done the last 4 days of Slashdot, and it's 8:58, and I've pretty much done about an hour, and I'm totally exhausted, and my voice is about to give out. So I hope it was entertaining. If you're listening, if you just downloaded this just now, I hope I did a good job. I really tried my best, and I wish you all a lovely holiday season and all that bull crap. And hopefully my partners in crime will be back next week, and we can do something a little bit more entertaining and a little less of a monologue or monologous or monologish or whatever. So I'm just going to go. I really appreciate you listening. Visit our website, dial-a-dork.com, dialadork.com. Email us anytime, dorks@dialadork.com. That's hyphenated, dial-a-dork.com. And that should do it. Thank you very much for tuning in. Good night.